Tell me about your thoughts of genetic engineering from the ancients. What did they do, if anything?
Well, George, you know, this to me is really the big issue because, as you know from various people that have researched this subject, Zechariah Sitchin and some others, the ancient texts, and I spend a great deal of time in Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men talking about a set of tablets, cuneiform tablets called the Karsag tablets that, if you interpret them from a certain point of view, certainly seem to suggest that there is some genetic engineering that took place. And these texts, just to kind of give the details, these texts indicate that there were kind of prototypical proto-human mothers that were selected, and then a member of the Anunnaki or whatever you wish to call that group of people that donated the male component, and that essentially that modern humanity is a genetically engineered and created creature. And furthermore, if you look at these texts, they suggest something very, very disturbing. And incidentally, in The Grid of the Gods that my friend Scott and I are releasing at the end of May, I examined the same legend, and it's certainly found in the Mayan texts and almost in the same way, all right? So in other words, we're not looking at something that is restricted to Mesopotamian legends. This is something that you also find in the legends and lore of other cultures. And if this be the case, then we're looking at a disturbing thing, because the first thing that these texts, all from the Mayans to the Mesopotamians, state is that mankind was created as a kind of a slave to serve the gods, all right?
Yep.
And this is, number one, the first problem, because in effect what that is saying is that from the ancient point of view, we have, number one, genetic cousins out there somewhere, and number two, we are property, all right? Now, that in itself raises an interesting issue, because one of the things I did in the book, George, is I compared the modern genome war that took place between the Public Genome Project and the private race that was led by Craig Venter of Valera Corporation. And in the process of examining that, I looked at American patent law. And American patent law, if you patent a gene, under patent law, the invention has to be duplicatable by the hand of man. Number two, it cannot arise in nature, and it must have had the hand of man in the invention so that it can be patentable. Well, if you apply these concepts to the ancient texts, you find that all the texts would be able to be adjudicated under American patent law and a patent awarded for basically the creation of mankind. So again, we come down to the fact that the implication legally is that we are property. So I kind of leave the question open in the book that if our cousins were to come back, you know, how would law adjudicate this? Because it is a potential problem. Now, the other thing that the text mentions, George, is very, very crucial, is that this is a wholesale program. This is not just the engineering or the manipulation of human DNA. This is something that they're doing across the board with all sorts of species. There's an ancient Babylonian historian by the name of Berosus, and he's even cited and quoted in many of the early church fathers. And Berosus maintains in his text that not only do you have an engineering of mankind, but you have the engineering of very chimerical species of blending humanity with animals and so on and so forth. So in other words, what we're looking at, George, with modern science, and I find this to be equally disturbing, we are looking really at a science that seems to be designed, in my opinion, to bring to reality the mythological creations of the past. So in other words, again, that raises the bar considerably, because what it's implying is that these ancient texts are in fact talking about a reality that happened. So, you know, it's a very complex question, because we are dealing today, in other words, with the same sorts of ethical problems that were being dealt with in very, very ancient times and in the mists of prehistory. And that's the problem.
Now, as civilizations began to evolve over the years, they seem to have lost this knowledge until here we are today. What happened in between?
Well, this is the problem that I start prying into, really, in Babylon's Banksters. And again, this book is trying to pry the lid off even more, and then the sequel to it, The Grid of the Gods, is going to pry it off even more. To me, George, I think, again, all of this is arguing that you're looking at the activity of at least one elite, if not more, that has been in more or less continual existence since ancient times. And again, the behavior of all elites throughout history is to try and preserve knowledge for themselves and leak as much of it as they dare to the public to maintain their own power. I think this is what's going on. And I think certainly you could argue a case. I certainly do not advance it as a dogmatic case, but only as a speculative possibility. I think you could advance the possibility that many of the ancient systems of belief were created simply to mask the activity of this elite, to disguise it, as it were, behind religion, behind mystery schools, behind mm-hmm. temples and priesthoods and so on. And I certainly suggest that in the book.
Well, you know, I was going to say, do you think the gods of ancient times mm-hmm. were simply visitors or, primarily visitors?
I incline to that view, George, and here's why. If you look at these ancient texts, for the most part, they are describing people. They are describing conscious beings with emotions, with feelings, with agendas, and you know, like all intelligent beings, they fight and argue amongst themselves and so on and so forth. That said, I do think that you have to hold open the possibility as well that many of these ancient legends are telling the truth when they say that these beings are, to some degree, spiritual beings as well. They come from, if you will, other dimensions. They might be angels, they might be demons, and so on and so forth. So I think, to kind of sum it up, that you're really looking at three classes of things. You're looking at genetic cousins, in other words, human-like beings with whom we share some genetic compatibility that makes all this engineering possible. And then secondly, I think you're looking at deeper possible entities, that you're looking at gods in the proper sense. You're looking at angels or what have you, because some of these beings can't be classified, if you examine the text carefully, as corporeal beings like we are. So I think you have to hold open all possibilities.
Why us? Why, if they came through other dimensions or they came from other planetary systems, why here, Joseph?
Another good question. And increasingly, George, I think it's because there is something special and unique about this place and about humanity. This is over and over again the conclusion, the weight of the evidence that ancient lore suggests. And my word, when I say ancient lore, I mean everything from the Vedic texts of India to the legends and lore of China and Japan to Mesoamerica. They're all more or less universal in saying that there is something special about this place and something special about humanity.